get it on.
Thank you for tuning in to The Queer Truth, a podcast that takes on a variety of topics from pop culture to everyday life. I'm Chantel C. You can call me CC. And I'm joined by my partner in organizing, Denise. It's been so long.
It's been a very long time. Some of us are completely centered, coming back from meditation retreats. Yeah. Others of us are in Barcelona, traveling, Espanol and stuff. So yeah, that's me.
I have to admit, it has been a very steep re-entry. So many things have happened just upon my coming back into this world of electronics and digital and whatnot. So obviously the big question is, are we going to talk about the love of my life unexpectedly dying? No, we're not, because no one wants to hear me cry. But someone else died this week. So sad to hear about. Afeni Shakur, Tupac Shakur's mother, passed away on Monday, and Twitter reached out and did the Dear Mama hashtag and repped and gave her so much joy. I'm sure Tupac would have been very proud. But on a positive note, there's also life coming into the world. Janet Jackson has announced that she is pregnant a few days before she turns 50. Pregnant at 50. That's the world we live in today, Denise. What you think?
I'm not okay. This is something rich people could do, I guess. You know, I mean, like, I don't understand it. I'm trying to wrap my head around it. Like, why? When? Who? Why?
We went back to the why again.
I'm back. I went straight back to the why. Like, I don't understand. Like, okay. Especially, this is something that happens a lot with modern women, is that, you know, you're dealing with a lot of partners that aren't ready for prime time. Mm-hmm. In your 20s, in your 30s. You're also focused on your career and your education, getting some stuff in order.
Look, we should all be thankful that she did not have a baby with Jermaine Dupri. That's all I'm going to say about it. That's all I'm going to say.
Oh gosh. How about have a baby with Elle DeBarge? Like that.
It would have been a beautiful baby, though.
She could have very well gone the way of Halle Berry with, like, two baby daddies. She could have been, you know, kind of like a Bad Omen precursor to Erykah Badu type situation. It could have happened. So I know she's really happy about birth control, but and given medical technology and the access to it that she has, this baby should be just fine.
Yeah, and let's hope so. Mm-hmm. Wishing Miss Jackson all the best.
In motherhood.
And hoping, though, that she gives some folks a refund.
Oh, so. Girl, she ain't giving nobody that money. She's going to use that money on some diapers. She's going to use it on some wet wipes that are, like, you know, doused in holy water. Like, you know, what rich people do. I don't know what they do.
You're a mess. So one of the highlights of the year for me coming out of the White House is the White House Correspondents' Dinner. It happened this past week. I love it. It's an annual event to celebrate the free press, right? Because as we know, it is constantly under attack. There are many, many journalists from around the free world locked up in places that do not honor free press. So that's what the White House Correspondents' Dinner is about. But it's a lot of fun as well. Press is invited, stars are invited, and the president makes jokes, and comedians make jokes. And I have to say, President Obama continues to show that, as the very smart brother put it, he is the grand supreme wizard of no fucksistan. And his jokes, they went on for about 30 minutes. They were great. He hit up Hillary, he hit up Bernie, he went on Cruz, and oh, right, that guy. He even made a joke. I was running on CPT, which stands for jokes that white people should not make. I mean, he was doing it all. It was great. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's also a host. And that host this year was Larry Whitmore, who has his own show on Comedy Central called The Nightly Show with Larry Wilmore. And Larry Wilmore, for those of you who might not know, is a Black man. And most of his jokes were going in on all things Black, making the very white crowd feel uncomfortable, which was a beautiful thing. And he ended his set by saying, "Yo, Barry, you did it, my nigga." So, hey, if you look at the clip, Obama's laughing in the moment, stands up, they give a little brotherly hug, go on about their business. If it were only so simple. No, it's not. White press America had to get mad about it. Mm-hmm. And the president's press secretary addressed it by saying that he didn't care about the backlash. He felt like he appreciated the joke and its sentiments. And he's confident that Mr. Wilmore used the word by design. What mm-hmm. is the issue here?
The issue is that it's really hard for white people not to be allowed to do anything. And it is so it rubs them so the wrong way that there is something that we can do, that Black people can do, that they cannot do. Because that is not the way that white supremacy has designed their lives. So the way that white supremacy is set up, privileges are in the arena for white people.
Right.
Like, that's their stuff. They have all the privileges. They got 90% of the jobs. They mm-hmm. got, you know, in many industries, high paying ones to you too. Mm-hmm. They got, you know, all manner of privileges and access, and, you know, they can like roll out and like wield a knife and gun at police officers and still be alive. I mean, like, that's their privilege.
Right.
The idea that there's something as, even if it's as little as a word that they don't have access to, it makes them mad. You know, it makes them real mad. I mean, anytime a marginalized community has any level of access that people feel, that white people feel that they don't have access to, it brings out the worst, the absolute worst in them. And the reclaiming of the word, I think, makes them very uncomfortable in the sense that the word acts as a reminder to mm-hmm. them mm-hmm. because they can't use it, and they can't use it for some very specific historical reasons. And at the same time, it like flaunts it in their face in the sense of like, oh, we have this access that you don't have. It's a rough thing.
But isn't this that offended me camp odd? Because if you say, "I'm a white person and I believe Black people shouldn't say that word," and then you go on to say, "If they can say it, why can't I?" How is that the argument? How was that offensive?
Well, that's the schizophrenic nature of white supremacy, right? Like, on the one hand, you're arguing out of both sides of your mouth, in the sense of like, on the one hand, you want to tell Black people what to do with their own mouths and how they address each other, mm-hmm. and on the other hand, you want to reclaim access to something that you're seen as being excluded from. That's how that works. Anything that sticks, devil advocate, Black people can be racist too. My people really struggled. The Irish people were slaves. I mean, like, whatever sticks, like, they're going to try it.
Well, according to Damon Young from the Very Smart Brother blog, unless you have been well-educated in nigger use, you're not allowed to use that word. And if you're not Black, you're certainly not allowed to use that word. So I don't see the controversy. I think it's a non-controversy. And I love the fact that Obama is absolutely unbothered by it all. There's been no backpedaling. He's like, deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
Continuing in the beloved form of white supremacy, whitewashed out was the hashtag of the week, because Asians are fighting back with the Hollywood erasure of so many of the big roles. Now, this isn't new. Right? Mickey Rooney in Breakfast at Tiffany's back in 1961. We had Emma Stone in Aloha playing a Pacific Islander, I believe. Tilda Swinton in Doctor Strange. Now Scarlett Johansson in Ghost in the Shell. And so things like Nerds of Color, I believe Nerds of Color actually coined the hashtag whitewashed out, are trying to celebrate Asian Pacific American Heritage Month by bringing up all these things. Why do you think this is getting more attention than, I mean, now I will say the boycotts have worked. So what was that? Gods of Egypt?
Egypt.
That washed out.
It should have been Gods of Scotland. Gods of California.
You know, there has been some success recently that are making people realize, look, you can't play this, but whitewashed out is specifically for the Asian community. How do you feel about it?
I love that they started this hashtag. I love that George Takai went in on this. If you can find that quote, that's an amazing quote from him, because he's like old school. So for those that don't know, George Takei played one of the officers in the old school Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And he was one of the very first Asians that was on regularly used television and has since come out as a gay man and is very popular on the internets. And he was just like, nah, fuck this. I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, George, you know, is my nigga. But
now, but, what do you mean? On Facebook, he wrote, so let me get this straight. You can cast a white actress so you wouldn't hurt sales in Asia? Mm-hmm. This backpedaling is nearly as cringeworthy as the casting. Marvel must think we're all idiots. Are you talking about that one?
I'm talking about that. And then he goes further to say, it would be one thing if Asians were being cast across Hollywood, but they're not. And there's been a systemic exclusion of Asian actors. And so it's clearly not just like, oh, each one. Anytime there's an incident of racism, what white people say is that this individual's circumstance is a special snowflake butterfly thing that isn't at all related to trends or history. And we know that's not the case. So what he's referring to was hurting sales in Asia was that they said that they cast Tilda Swinton in the Great Wise One part,
right?
Because
it was a Tibetan person and they have to appease the Chinese market.
Right. And that's some bullshit. So, right. That's like some total bullshit. It was really ridiculous. And The Love Life of an Asian Guy has talked about this ad nauseum also. But the point is that, you know, we've seen through them. We know what they're doing here. Scarlett Johansson is really worrisome to me because this is not her first white supremacist thing, right? Like, this isn't the first thing that she's done that has made it really clear that she's like on some conservative, you know, no gives any fucks. Like, I would not be at all surprised if you like went into Scarlett's house and it was like a Confederate flag somewhere. Like, just who she is, right? Back in the day in 2014, she had a deal with SodaStream. SodaStream was a company that had a factory in occupied territory in the West Bank. Mm. And right, Oxfam was like, don't do that. That's an illegal factory. And she gave no fucks. Mm. She was like, I think this is a way to move forward out of an impossible situation. That's a quote.
Wow.
Okay, I'm coming Scarlett. Into this as some, yes. I'm coming into this as someone who sees that factory as a model for some sort of movement forward in a seemingly impossible situation. That is what she said about a factory, an Israeli factory in occupied territory that she was repping for, that she had a contract to rep.
Okay.
Double down on wrong. Right. That's who she is, right? Like, I don't know it's because she didn't have enough education or if she gives no fucks or she's racist in her heart and heart is cold. I don't know. But at some point, what white people have to understand is that it doesn't matter.
Right.
Right. It really doesn't matter what you were thinking in the moment, if you had a bad day, if you didn't have coffee that day. If you're doing some racist fuck shit, it goes down in history as this person did some racist fuck shit.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So she's this like massive movie star. And, you know, what's interesting is that she gets a lot of Marilyn Monroe comparisons. But Marilyn Monroe was so clearly, in terms of social justice issues, on the right side of history.
Right.
Scarlett Johansson has been consistently on the wrong side of history when it comes to social justice issues. So that's clearly who she is.
Mm-hmm. Although, well, that's unfortunate. Kind of making me feel bad about going to see Captain America this weekend, but I'm still going.
I'm going to go in on Scarlett Johansson some more because y'all, you know, I'm a bit of a nerd. She plays the Black Widow. I was excited about her playing the Black Widow because, you know, yay, 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 woman, feminism, all that great stuff. Whatever.
Uh-huh.
But everyone was like calling for her to have a spinoff. Marvel said, no, we can't have her have a spinoff. She doesn't have enough of an audience. But now the argument for Ghost in the Shell is that we needed a big name.
Right.
So you're talking about somebody that you couldn't even get to do their own character that had been well established in a major franchise already,
mm-hmm.
have their own spinoff. But now you're talking about they're such a big name that they need to bring y'all agents up a notch.
Mm-hmm.
Some bullshit. And it's the way in which white women consistently cling to their whiteness and, you know, any kind of feminist ideology goes out the window.
Right.
But it's white feminism. Yes.
It's odd, though, that that would be the argument, considering, well, with Marvel specifically, right, the new model of the groundbreaking movie is using, like, the dude that nobody actually really knows. So Guardians of the Galaxy and mm-hmm. Deadpool were two of the biggest films last year.
And Star Wars.
You know, mm-hmm. Deadpool is the largest grossing R-rated film in history. With, mm-hmm. like, this low-profile dude who, like, has been in maybe, like, a couple of rom-coms. I can't even think of his name right now. So, so it's like, that's not even an argument. I think at this point, rather than working on it proactively, what they're doing is finding a way to, like, try to not put out the fire, but just, like, keep the flames low enough that it doesn't catch on to the curtains. Like, Emma Stone claims that she learned so much about whitewashing after Aloha, but that was after Aloha. So you already mm-hmm. got your paycheck, right?
You got your paycheck, right. None of y'all. And what's really annoying is that Tilda Swinton, Scarlett Johansson, Emma Watson, all of them. Was it Emma Watson?
Emma Stone.
I'm sorry. Yeah, because it was Emma Stone. Sorry. Y'all look alike. The thing is that they all have no problem making a car note payment. They're not struggling actresses.
Right.
They're not on the come up, and they're making decisions that have major impact, and they're not taking any accountability for it. Mm-hmm. And they have the power to design their careers.
Right.
It's not that she, you know, you can't read a wiki article on some Ghost in the Shell. You can't do that. You can't. There's another piece of this that I want to talk about, because I'll be going down some old rabbit holes up in the internet sometimes.
Uh-huh.
There's a Japanese vlogger that has put out a video where Japanese people are given the information that Scarlett Johansson is going to be the character for Ghost in the Shell. Mm-hmm. For those of you who don't know, this is a Japanese of a Japanese origin. It's a huge there. It's massive. Right. And asking them, well, what do you think about Scarlett Johansson being this person to be starring now in Ghost in the Shell? And they're like, oh, I think it's fine. That's the general consensus on the street in Japan, according to this vlogger. The reason why I found this rationale being so problematic, that, oh, racism or the perception of whitewashing is such an American thing, is that it's a freaking American movie. Y'all ain't making it in Japan. It's right. American. We got Japanese people over here. So you want to talk about this? You know, you want to talk about this? You talk to Japanese Americans, because right. they do not have Japanese people in Japan don't know the history of a Scarlett Johansson in Hollywood playing an adaptation of Ghost in the Shell the way that a Japanese American person would. Right. I think that's so fucked up, is that when people take incidents of racism out of their cultural context, mm-hmm. bring them to another culture, and say, well, they don't think it's racist on the northern tip of Tanzania. So it's not. Like, the hell? What is y'all talking about? You want to talk about Schwarze Pet? You talk to Black people in Amsterdam or in Holland, right? You don't go talk to, you know, Black people in Aruba about Schwarze Pet. Level of justifying racist things in one cultural context by taking them out of that context and putting them there is really problematic. You're talking about Japan, that has a history of being the majority in their culture. They're xenophobic right. in themselves. And they have all this. They have a totally different history with mass media.
Absolutely.
They see themselves represented all the time.
Right.
So having one incident where so a white actress is playing a Japanese character doesn't seem like a big deal for them. No, should it? But it's not their issue.
Mm-hmm.
It's so annoying. I hate that. People do that all the time. And I'm in I live in Austria. And in Austria, and also this happened when I lived in Germany, what they would do is they would take racist incidents that happened in Germany and Austria, and as a way of deflecting those racist incidents, they would talk about a worse incident somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
But they would talk about, well, but, you know, so let's say if a police brutalizes a man in Austria, they would say, well, if it was America, the police would have killed him. Right.
Right. So, level so we're already better.
A deflection by being like, is you What?
Yeah. At least we didn't kill him. Yeah. Okay. And in our second segment, unfortunately, as I knew we would have to, just in this year, we're coming back to the topic of sexual assault. But I, of course, want us to talk about a very unique aspect of this case. So on May 2nd, a Twitter account at Raped at Spellman tweeted their story of sexual assault. And it felt very personal, I have to say. The person in very few tweets explained that it's their freshman year at Spelman. For those of you who don't know, Spelman is in Atlanta, Georgia. It is an HBCU for women, for Black women. It is their freshman year at Spelman and their last year because they decided to leave due to what happened. And then in the following tweets, they explained that they went to a party where a lot of their people were. They were having a lot of fun. They decided to drink with the upperclassmen. They got a little too drunk, went to the bathroom to vomit, turned around after handling their business and found that Morehouse, a college for Black men, four Morehouse students had come into the bathroom, then escorted the person out to another room, and then took turns raping this person. They described it in their tweets. Then they also explained that they did everything right. They went straight to the hospital. A rape kit was taken. Then it took more than a month for the people to get back to the person. When they went to the meeting, the dean and public safety asked, "What were you wearing? Why did you separate from your friends? Why were you drinking underage?" Because all of these questions are so helpful in finding the perpetrators. Then on top of that, and for the people who don't know, Spelman and Morehouse are kind of seen as brother and sister schools. They have a very close relationship. The dean actually told the victim, "You should give them a pass because Morehouse, they're our brothers." So of course the person felt very worthless, own words, became depressed, had suicidal thoughts, and even started playing with self-harm. So they've decided to leave the school now. Of course, this attracted a lot of people quite quickly. The account Raped at Spelman had over 1,000 followers within 24 hours. And so hashtags Raped at Spelman, Raped at Morehouse, Raped by Morehouse were trending on Twitter. And of course, what did you see then? People, a lot of support, but also a lot of people doing what we just talked about. Well, why are you talking about Raped by Morehouse? We don't see the hashtag Raped by Yale. This isn't the only place this is happening. No, it's not the only place that it's happening. But this person had the courage and was motivated to speak out in order to help other people, perhaps. Silencing is never the way. But we've talked a lot about sexual assault, so I think everyone knows where we stand on that. What I find interesting about this case is because this person has tweeted, the president of Spelman has now gotten involved. And her name is Dr. Mary Schmidt Campbell. She said in a statement, "We are a family at Spelman and we will not tolerate any episode of sexual violence. No student should ever have to suffer and endure the experience she has recounted on social media. Spelman is conducting a full and thorough review of these events." Now, of course, we don't know what will happen, but the mere fact...
That was stock PR.
Of course.
That was a stock PR answer.
It was a stock PR answer, but it was an answer. They didn't stay silent on it, right? Mm-hmm. So, Morehouse, as far as I have checked the internet and I have not found any type of statement at this point from Morehouse. There might be one, but I didn't find it. So my question is this the route to go? You've done everything right as an assault victim. You've gone to the hospital. The rape kit has been handled. You've talked to public safety and the dean, and you've gotten no help. Then you go on Twitter, where you have the greatest impact and a very quick impact, and things appear to be moving in the right direction. Pros and cons.
This is part of a larger fight of rape on student campuses, but I think that there's a specific fight on rape on HBCU campuses. So I, full disclosure, went to Howard University, and within my circle of people, of acquaintances, there was someone who was raped, did everything right, and bypassed campus security. And by bypassed, I mean went to the actual police, and in doing so was able to get a conviction of rape. Wow. And for people that have worked with survivors know, it is extremely hard, if not impossible, of getting a rape conviction, even when you are clearly raped. Mm-hmm. You essentially in 2016 almost have to have a video of the event. This happened in the 90s. And after the conviction of rape, sadly, or during the trial, sadly, this person who was the rapist, who was a very dynamic individual, well-liked, as many rapists actually tend to be, had a lot of support. People missing classes to show up in the courtroom and sit on his side of the court and support him because, Lord forbid, another Black man end up in prison. That being what it is, you know, of course, in hindsight, people look back and they see they sat on the wrong side of that courtroom. But I feel that sentiment is so deep with us, especially with, you know, dynamic and amazing and individuals that have contributed a lot to society, like Bill Cosby or with African Bambaataa, that there's definitely this sense that we should sort of grin and bear whatever criminal act they put upon the bodies of women, of children, whatever, out of some sort of solidarity, Black solidarity, to keep Black men out of prison by any means necessary. Mm-hmm. I think it is wrongheaded. I think it is really problematic. It is really problematic. And there's so many ways in which Black men suffer through, you know, rape culture and misogyny too. Just 2 days ago at another university in Georgia, a Black man confronted someone who was going around and groping women in the cafeteria and stabbed to death.
What?
And I think I don't see these as separate events. Mm-hmm. Right.
But what I want to talk about specifically is the fact that it took her going to Twitter to get a response. What does that mean for 2016? What does that signal to survivors? Is this the only way you can be taken seriously? A social media following?
Sadly, yes. That it signals that the corporatization of universities means that they're more concerned with their image and what that narrative of that image is, as opposed to what they're actually doing on the ground and how they're affecting the lives of their students.
Right. So many of the people who were criticizing these hashtags were criticizing for the fact that these are highly reputable HBCUs. And now anytime that you Google them, this will be one of the first hits that you get rather than all of the many good things that they've done. Okay. But as long as you're not working for every last person on campus, it doesn't matter if it's the depressed student, the drug addict, the sexual assault victim, then you can't be proud of your institution if your institution isn't doing that, right? What is the power, on the other hand, if you look at it in a different way, what is the power that has been given to survivors in being able to just, you know, do a couple of things with your VPN, open up your anonymous Twitter account, tweet your situation, and have thousands of followers within 24 hours? It's a lot of power that they have been given after having a lot of their power taken away.
Exactly. And she was able to do this and keep her anonymity.
Absolutely. So there's no information on when this happened. It could have been a month ago, because specifically in the tweets, it says that a month did pass. It could have been at the beginning of the freshman year, but it has happened sometime between August and now, because the person writes that they are a freshman. I just ask myself, what is the message that should be received? Not the one that they are receiving, but the message that should be received by other people in similar situations.
I think that there are alliances in student organizations that have been coming together, organizing themselves, mostly led by women that have been assaulted on campuses. And they're coming together to go ahead and create alliances and file Title IX suits and shed light on the situation. So I think that the idea is that this is how you get action from your university, because universities do not care by and large about sexual assault on campus. Universities by and large do not have an affirmative consent policy on campus. And for some reason, and I think it's a really horrible reason, I think it should absolutely be stopped, that universities are taking lead and participating in criminal investigations about crimes that are confronted, that are happening on their campus. I mean, this would never happen with a murder investigation. Mm-hmm. That they're like, okay, campus police.
Right.
You take the lead on this murder investigation. Let's go.
Right.
Like, but somehow campus police have tremendous authority, mm-hmm, with dealing with this criminal act that is happening on their campus. And they use this authority to protect the universities above all.
I was about to say, I think they have tremendous authority anytime it comes to crimes that people would like to close the case without too much of a public campaign around it. And those are the crimes that, of course, are considered boys will be boys, nothing too deep. So a little bit of vandalization, a little bit of sexual, mm-hmm, assault, it's all put in the same pool of severity, right?
Exactly.
So I would just like to say props to the person running at Raped at Spelman account. Thank you so much for your courage. And I hope that, mm-hmm, you continue to find support.
Mm-hmm. And I would also like to take this moment to destroy the myth of the crying wolf of rape survivors, right? This idea that people, you know, women are standing in line to tell some sort of like horrible story about, you know, their own violation is absolutely a myth. I believe survivors.
Believe survivors. And in our third segment, what's making us happy? What are we looking forward to? Since I know you're going to try to do some nonsense, since right now you in the sun, you're not feeling so cynical as normal, you're going to be like, I'm excited to be in Boston. I'm going to start, because no one wants to hear about your private vacation. I'm going to start because it's been such a good week for people of color and Black people. Believe it or not, even with whitewashed out, what we have this week is Danielle Brooks. Some of you might know her from Orange is the New Black. She is starring in The Color Purple on Broadway. And she received her first Tony nomination. Yay! She had a really cute thing that she put on Snapchat where she did like this ugly cry when she found out she had been nominated. It was super cute. Then, after Hamilton won the Pulitzer Prize, it was announced 16 nominations for Hamilton for the Tony Awards. And this is how Lin-Manuel Miranda reacted. He said, for all of you people who continue to say that Black and brown bodies do not sell, peep the ticket sales website and try. I dare you to try and get a ticket to this show. You won't find one. And you won't. It's true, because I've been looking. I want to go. But Lin-Manuel, he's doing it. 16 Tony nominations, already won the Pulitzer Prize. Amazing. I'm thoroughly excited. And then, as I already mentioned, I'm going to see Captain America on the weekend. I'm very much looking forward to the...
How are you looking forward to this?
I'm looking forward to it because I just got back from a meditation retreat and I didn't see it on the opening weekend. I'm looking forward to it now because Black Panther's being introduced finally in the films. Black Panther. Yes. So I'm excited about all things Black and brown this week.
Okay. That's nice. You excited about the Winter Soldier? I'm excited about that Nat Turner movie. What?
Yeah, I did see the trailer. The trailer was intense. But why are we excited about that? We're not going to get that over here. You think we're going to get that over here?
I get everything. You don't know me. I get it all. And you forget somebody going to be in Dominican Republic all in July. What? And I got to go through the states to the Dominican Republic.
You know that movie Too Black for the Dominican Republic and all the things they do with the Haitians, right? All the things they do to the Haitians, they're going to be like, we can't show this film, guys. I'm sorry. Y'all going to have to keep that on the continent.
Haitians don't need any revolutionary inspiration. They the revolutionary originators, yo. Yeah,
they love it. Yeah, They originate the revolution.
every chance. What? But yeah, so I'm excited about that Nat Turner movie. It looks very real. It looks amazing.
Yeah.
I'm excited that Lemonade came out.
So I have
this the first.
I haven't checked that out yet. Ooh, what a surprise.
You haven't.
The only thing I heard about was Becky.
Oh. And you know she's talking about me.
And that Jay-Z. I hope not, because we could not be friends anymore, bae. And Jay-Z is going to put out his side to the story, to the Lemonade story. Jay-Z, you don't have a side. Please be
me tell you why I like lemonade. The reason why I like lemonade is because
this is for our audience, because I know not everyone is in and on top of it. Lemonade is a newly released video/visual album by Beyonce.
You're delusional. And your auntie know about lemonade.
No. I know this for a fact because I made a lemonade reference and somebody didn't get it. And a lot of people would like to assume, and probably the truth, that a lot of the story is being told about Jay-Z's infidelity. Okay, go on.
Right. I don't really care about that backstory, about the gossip of who it's about. I really feel like a lot of celebrities, they actually play that for PR. Like, they put out some little tidbits on social media to make you think that, like, this is a real thing. It's, like, really happening to me. But at the end of the day, you know, that just gets it, it makes it juicier. It makes it more, more us ready to consume it. I don't really care about that aspect of it. What I care about is that there's so many ways in which Bae does what she is underrated for. And I think she should get more credit for, which is putting other people on.
Mm-hmm.
Putting other people on. She can carry, she could have carried Lemonade. I think it would have been fine.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that Bae makes a very, very concerted effort to illuminate Black excellence. So she got a poet that nobody was really checking for, blowing the hell up. She has artists that people weren't really hip to blowing the hell up. She's got filmmakers and a bunch of them actually that now have this on their resume, which is massive for a filmmaker. Black filmmaker. She's got artists, she's got stylists, she's got hair people, and they're all Black people.
Mm-hmm.
People sleep on that.
Mm-hmm.
By and large, some people slipped in there, but these are Black people that have been on the grind doing their thing and have been amazing at it, and she found them.
Mm-hmm.
And they are now put on.
Okay, well,
and it has been one of the biggest things that ever. Right. Like this is now, I think this is going to change the format of how people wrap together their albums.
It might. People claim that when she did that whole video thing, or she did like the one long video for whatever that other album was. What was the one?
Yes. Let me tell you something. And I don't like
how she dropped it. Everybody's like, oh, now all albums going to drop like this. It didn't happen. And what did she sell? Something like close to 700,000 albums for that album that dropped overnight. I'm not impressed. I have one word for this week. Views.
Shut the fuck up. That shit is boring as hell. Let me tell you something.
But guess what? Guess what?
It's, this is why capitalism
guess what? Guess
don't
how
work.
Much has it sold? How much has it sold?
That's why you, Miss Economist, that's why I don't fuck with you for real.
Look.
That's why capitalism thinks that just because something sold more is better.
No,
let me tell you something.
I like trade. I will school you one day so you finally understand the difference between capitalism and neoliberalism. Every time you use the word capitalism, you're talking about
shut
neoliberalism.
Shut the fuck up. This ain't class. Let me school you. I ain't going to be a microeconomic seminar, bitch. Let me tell you something.
Look, all I'm saying is
problem.
I have the title Bae Haters President for a reason. There's nothing you can say that
I want to give my two cents about Views because you know I love me some Drake.
No, everyone and a lot of people have said that they feel like it's uninspired. But guess what? The numbers don't lie. There you go.
I love me some Drake and all his Black Jewishness. And if you really want to fall in love with Drake, go to Jezebel and read the article from his voice coach.
Oh, I've read that.
That's amazing. That'll make you fall in love
with Drake.
Yeah. Easy. Yeah. But at the end of the day, I have had Views on preview mode forever, trying to get the to hit that buy button. And I cannot do it.
That's all right.
Can't part.
I'll do it for you.
Those $20. Can't do it. Not for Drake.
I haven't looked at that yet. Hold up. Well, that's all for this week. If you'd like to keep up with us, you can follow us on Twitter at The Queer Truth. We'd love to hear your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed today, so feel free to get at us. Until next time, peace out.